I'd like to welcome everyone to the study session, May City Council for Thursday, February 5th, 2009. We'll begin with item number one on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on municipal security services.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, members of council. My name is Mike Dvorak. I'm Assistant Police Chief over Support Services with the Mesa Police Department. Pleased to be with you today, and with me as well today is Lisa Quedens, our Fiscal Manager, and Commander Bill Peters, who's the Commander over the Support Services area. Today we come before you to discuss municipal security. During our recent budget discussions, one of the issues we looked at regarding some of the reductions was an evaluation of the concept of privatizing municipal security as a potential different way of doing business and a different business model that may impact some of the budgetary concerns that we had. So we are prepared today to talk to you a little bit about what we have found out related to the privatization issue by looking at some direction from some of the other cities in the valley and the impact that it may have on our potential program, in addition to a recommendation on potentially how we could proceed in that area. So at this point, I'd like to get into the PowerPoint and let Commander Peters work through the slides and some of the information that we have to present to you today.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Go ahead and get started with our slide presentation. First off, I thought it would be important to kind of give you a little bit of background on what municipal security is and how it came to be in our city. It was established in 1999, and at that time, its purpose was basically to look at our municipal court building in City Plaza and also to establish our card access system and badging with our city employees. After 9/11, obviously our worlds have all changed, and municipal security took on additional roles. They enhanced their alarm monitoring and their closed-circuit television monitoring of our city facilities. And in fact, they broke away from our police and fire dispatch and communication center and established their own, which is on 6th Street. Additionally, they increased security at a number of municipal buildings, and the Mesa Arts Center as well came on board. Just briefly, and I'm not going to read each one of these points, but some of the roles of municipal security, they're vast and varied, from doing regular patrol work to monitoring cameras to magnetometers. They are basically the first line of fire and police services at municipal buildings. They escort our employees to and from their vehicles or other facilities as is needed. They prepare reports. They do a number of different things. Even more important to that, they are often the very first person that our citizens see when they come into our buildings. They are, in fact, the ambassadors of our city. They are the first ones that our public often go to for information when they come into buildings. They are the face of our government, and the customer service aspect that they provide in that role is critical in what their jobs are. And in my opinion, they do a very outstanding job of that. When we started looking at other potential private security vendors, we did look specifically at Tempe and at Scottsdale, who use private security. We've had discussions with the various department heads that may be affected should we outsource some areas, as well as with the individual vendors. We've talked to three different companies. And based on our department directors, the information we know about the particular aspects of the job and what we're learning from the other cities, the criteria that we're looking at in these companies are the experience that they have with city security, because that's very different than it is with other types of security, such as event plannings. What kind of qualifications they have, very importantly, what their customer service is and the level of customer service that they would provide both to the municipality and our citizens. How responsive that they may be to our staff. The reporting procedures is something that is critical, and the other municipalities felt was very important as well. One of the big concerns a lot of our areas had is what would this private security, what would they look like? And they didn't want to have t-shirt security personnel sitting in front of our municipal buildings. And that is one of the things we closely looked at, and we did not see that in Tempe or in Scottsdale. and the companies cater to that concern. Also, the flexibility of their staffing is something that we wanted to make sure that we had a good understanding of, and we'll get a little more of that later, and then obviously the fiscal impact on our city. Currently, our full authorized strength is 42 full-time employees. Through attrition and also through the voluntary severance package, we're down to 32 currently, so we've already lost 10 employees, and that does put us at a very critical stage right now. We did take a look, a very critical look at our post and in determining what areas may be susceptible for outsourcing and which ones that we would not recommend that on. And so we identified essentially very critical secured facilities and then less critical but still important. In those, in identifying the secured facilities, we're looking at things that the sensitivity of the municipal structures, how many people are being screened as they go through those facilities, and what additional type of security roles do our municipal security officers provide at those facilities. We identified the communication center as one of our secured facilities. That is an off-site. It's separate from our police and fire, which many people don't know. It is a dispatching center. It has multiple closed-circuit television cameras that monitor all sorts of facilities here in our city. They dispatch our staff from there, and it controls our secure alarm and access. So they know anytime an employee enters a building, it goes through that communication center. City Plaza, because of the sensitive structures of our municipal government, and also our municipal court. At the municipal court, they routinely screen between 1,500 and nearly 2,000 people per day that go in and out of that facility. Also, the municipal security officers that we have there are assigned to do court-ordered fingerprinting and shortly the DNA or the buccal swabbing that is required for some of our people that we arrest. The important facilities would be the MAC, our East Mesa Service Center, the municipal building here at 55 North Center, the museum, and our main library. In evaluating, and critically, and I can't stress that this was a difficult process to go through and was not taken lightly, our recommendation to bring in within the budget that we believe we can and still provide a valuable service would be to eliminate the 10 vacant positions we currently have, retain 16 FTEs for the critical sites, and then outsource the additional 16 FTEs. We believe that we can have that implemented by April of 2008 using existing municipal contracts. Some of the advantages of outsourcing. On standalone post, in the research that we've done, we believe we will receive equivalent levels of service. The private vendors are very customer service oriented. It is a very competitive market. They compete against one another to provide these services. And in our discussions, again, with Tempe and Scottsdale, they're very satisfied with that level of service that they're receiving. The cost when you're dealing with private security is based on hours rather than units of FTE. So that provides us some benefit because we budget based on 40-hour full-time employees. They have a greater level of deployment flexibility. So, for instance, at the MAC, most often day and swing shift, and when they don't have events, they don't require a large amount of staffing. But when they have events, they require additional staffing. So, and in some events, even more. On four-hour blocks, you can bring in additional sources. Just give them advance notice, and you have the staffing that you need. As it is now, we're overemployed sometimes. Sometimes we're underemployed, and when we're underemployed, we need to bring in people on overtime or that sort of basis to cover for those venues. You can use existing contracts. We would not have to go to RFP. Bringing in 16 equivalent FTEs or hourly employees, some of the contract companies would offer an on-site contract or project manager. So we would have somebody established full-time here that would be our go-to person. The significance of the savings, based on the information we have, we're looking at $760,000. With that, we'll open it to Mayor, Council for questions.
Councilmember Higgins?
First question I have is, what does the 10 FTE reduction actually cost? Because you don't break, you say we're reducing 10, we're going to move 16. How much does just that 10 people that we're not?
Just the 10 is at $558,000.
So what's 558 from 760? $200,000? So we're actually saving $200,000 by outsourcing 16 FTEs.
Yes.
Good. Thanks.
Well, before we know.
Lisa, speak to that. I don't.
Yeah,
you'd
let me understand.
Saving the $760,000, keeping the same level of service that we're having if we were to fill the 10 positions.
So if you had 42, your 760 is based on a fully staffed 42 positions.
That's correct.
Okay. How many actual employees make up those 42 full-time equivalents? I mean, you have part-time another time, or are they all full-time?
They're all full-time.
Okay, so you have all full-time. So like when you do have a special event, you have a four-hour shift. Like you said, you either have, you either pay overtime, or somebody's worked a half shift and then moves over there to work another half shift. Do they work 8-hour days, or do they work?
We can juggle their schedules around somewhat, but they generally work 4-10 shifts.
Okay, so if we had 42 employees, they would all be working 40 hours a week.
Yes.
Whether we had special events or didn't have special events, and when we do have special events, how do we juggle that if they're already all working 40-hour weeks?
Well, it comes into overtime, and it gets, and generally this only occurs at the MAC, but at the MAC then it goes into overtime or off-duty rates that go back into the project budgeting of the MAC.
Okay, so we don't have any part-time security right now that we flex around and can move around.
Correct.
Okay.
And let's get clear on the number, because I think it's a little, the 10 vacancies, while if they were completely eliminated would be the $550,000, we've assumed though that whatever, the 42 FTEs is the kind of the equivalent of the number of hours of service of coverage. I'm trying to convert FTEs to hours, because when we contract with a vendor, we're actually contracting in much
per hour,
yeah,
right.
Shorter units. And so there is an option. I mean, we even looked at the option, if you just took the 10 FTEs that are vacant and you converted those to a vendor, you could actually save $250,000.
Well, and I guess that's my question as to why we have 42 full-time employees when we have part-time events and we have part-time security needs. I'm trying to figure out why we don't have part-time that we then fill in so we avoid the overtime. I guess I don't understand how that was working. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suspect, I don't know how.
Couldn't we create our own, I'm asking sort of a hypothetical question, but couldn't we create our own flexibility by not filling those 10 positions with full-time employees? Or is that feasible for us? Or is that feasible
being able to hire
the type of person?
Even under part-time, we still have minimum hours. We're still, a part-time person is still a much larger number of hours.
Because we only have a certain number of events to put them in, whereas what you're saying is that a security service can move them to the MAC one day and move them to ABC company for an event another, and they can keep a full-time
employee.
There is
an advantage, because when you're buying it from a vendor who has a larger
work
than what we just would provide, they have the great, if we work with them, they can provide the flexibility of providing when we only need one person versus when we need five. And there's some huge advantage in that for places like the MAC or other areas. And most of those areas that we have today, though, are frankly pretty continuous. There are, that's not the right word, but that's always the same number of hours typically. Is that fair?
Yes.
We're not surging. So there is some flexibility certainly at the MAC to allow us to buy in smaller pieces. But also, it does come down to cost differential between what it costs for us to have for a full-time equivalent that we pay for on the city side versus what a private vendor could be. And so we even see that difference today. Again, even if you took the 10 FTEs and replaced their number of hours that they provide to the city with a private vendor, we would still save over $200,000 just on that.
Vice Mayor?
What is the actual breakdown per FTE, whether we have our person and their hourly, what is the actual difference per person?
We have the hourly, it's an hourly average deal.
Councilmember Jones, it's hourly for municipal security officers, $25 an hour. That's benefits and overhead.
Okay, benefits and overhead. And when we hire somebody through another firm, what is it per person?
The current one that we're looking at is $15.63. It's about $10.
Well, they don't pay them much, do they?
Wow.
That's the cost.
That's the cost.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying there. If that's their cost, they don't pay them hardly anything at all.
Councilmember Summers?
Bounce off that question on the savings of $760,000. You had mentioned that you picked that up with existing contracts. Do we have an existing security contract, or would we have to go out and get another contract, and how much is that contract going to cost? In other words, is this a gross or a net cost savings that you just, the $760,000?
$760,000 savings is a blend between city employees and outsourcing, compared to what our fully staffed 42 FTE cost is right now.
Okay, so it does take into account the number of people we would need on the $15 an hour.
Yes.
So it's a net.
Right, and your question as to the contracts, there are existing contracts out there that we're allowed to tie into. Tempe has some, and Scottsdale also has some.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Higgins?
I just wondered why we're not opening this up to an RFP process, because I know there are local Mesa firms that do this, and we're talking about Tempe and Scottsdale. So I don't understand. I mean, we're just looking at those two. We haven't actually opened it up to know what our savings could be with other companies.
Just real quickly, Tempe and Scottsdale are not necessarily where the firms are from. That's the city that's contracting with a firm. And typically, when we're looking to procure services in order to save time and move forward, if there's already a contract that's been acquired through a public process like we would do, we have the opportunity to look at those and take advantage of those that exist today. And Tempe and Scottsdale just happen to have those. Now, we certainly have the option, if we choose to develop our own RFP, put it out there, and go through a review process. It's just, it's time and whatever, but we could do that. We're not prohibited from doing that. We oftentimes try to find a way to take advantage of what other cities have already put in place.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I'm going to follow up on a question from Councilmember Higgins. With regard to the companies that are used in Tempe and Scottsdale, I'd like to know who the companies are, who are their shareholders or owners, are there any former Mesa employees involved in that ownership that create a conflict issue? What is their turnover rate for employees, and what do they actually pay their employees? Do you have the answers to any of those questions?
Councilmember Kavanaugh, I wouldn't know who the shareholders are, but the companies are, for Scottsdale is ACAL, A-K-A-L, and then in Tempe they use two different companies. They use Wackenhut and Team. Wackenhut is also the one that we utilize on. The hourly wages that they pay their employees, I do have that. It's in here, and I can get that to you. Okay. Give me 1 second here.
I was just going to ask Chris a question while he's looking that up. Just kind of fill the time here. What does it cost us to issue and process an RFP?
Well, we use existing staff. It's the effort that takes between the police department and procurement to sit down and write up a RFP. Now, we may be able to go and borrow some language from other cities. It's really a time issue. And time becomes, in this case, just like all our budget issues, is a dollar cost. Ultimately, so, but we can do that. We can certainly go back out and do that if there's certain special criteria that we are looking for that the other cities haven't. We could include that, but I'm not aware of anything. These are services that came to our attention as we were talking about light rail security and talking with other cities who had not only were interested in doing privatization of security on light rail, but had already implemented it at their city halls and their city facilities. And through that conversation, and frankly some discussions here with members of council who asked us to look into this, we recognize that that industry has grown quite a bit, and it's being utilized in a lot of different areas. So it's an option, council. We just wanted to present it to you. I think there's a lot of, you know, we've talked about the positives and challenges that it brings, but with the 10 vacancies we have, we certainly felt like there was an opportunity here. Go ahead.
The Scottsdale contract is on their bid that they put forth. The minimum was $11.50 an hour per employee.
Okay.
The two Tempe contracts, one is at $11 an hour, and the other one is at?
Minimum 11.
Minimum 11.
Yep.
So they're all about in the same ballpark.
Right. Do you know if these companies happen to take the U.S. Airways approach to employee benefits? I know they offer benefits, but typically these companies require employees to pay for health, for short-term disability, life insurance, issues like that. It's all a la carte. You may not have been including the information that you get.
Speaking of that, what we've done so far is basically just look at the various options to present the concept regarding privatization and what's been offered in the other cities and a little on the companies. I think additional research in terms of as we get, we're proceeding in that direction as far as whether it's the RFP process or whether it's looking at the existing contracts in the city, it gives us a chance to, I think, do further research on the particular companies and answer a lot of those questions more specifically. At this point, from an overview standpoint, we've looked at a lot of just what those cities have done and what the companies have provided. I think some of the answers that we could certainly provide for you as we proceed with the process in terms of details.
And certainly I think that one of the questions that would be important to ask is what the turnover rate is for these companies, because in my experience from my day job, the turnover rate for these companies is incredibly high. Unfortunately, many of the people who work there view these jobs as a stopover on the road to other jobs. So their turnover is an issue that has to be looked at. Those are all the questions I have right now. I'll reserve comments for later.
Councilmember Higgins?
I wondered if, I know we were just looking at outsourcing, but did we look at ways of taking municipal security and saving costs within it? For instance, asking the employees we currently have if some of them would like to become part-time employees, if we looked at additional things we do in the city, like have municipal security do parking enforcement, those type of extra things to maybe streamline them, make them a little more flexible, and give them other responsibilities that they could possibly, I'm not sure if they can, but take on where we currently pay somebody else to do that, so that we could actually keep our own municipal security.
Councilmember Higgins, I think right now with our 32 FTEs, in order to provide the level of services at our current facilities, they don't have, there's no room to take on additional duties, not at this point. We're at a critical stage now where if somebody takes vacation or calls in sick, a post goes unmanned. So could we explore them doing additional? Sure, we could do that, but I think we're going to require more staff just to maintain our current services that we're trying to do.
I like the way we're thinking as far as the needs, the critical needs we have. I frankly think that it's important at City Hall and at places of high visibility, the courts, that we have somebody with a city badge there. I mean, I think for the appearance for the public, that I for some reason, when I go into a government building and these other security services, they may be fine, they may be wonderful, but for some reason I don't get the same sense of feeling of security. Or it just seems out of place to walk in and see a contract employee providing security to a city hall. So I like that approach. I like the fact that we're looking at ways to handle our temporary needs or our flexible needs. It seems to me that if you're stuck with full-time positions that are providing part-time or having to shift them around, that's incredibly inefficient. I'm having a little bit of challenge with your math, though, and I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but if we're eliminating 26 full-time positions, and we're saving $760,000. That's about $30,000 a position we're saving. And somehow there's that seems like it's a little aggressive in the net. Are we saying that it's $30,000 a person that we would save by going to an outside service and provide the same level of service? Because that seems a little high to me. And maybe I'm missing something.
I think what the confusion is that when you look at city employees, you base it on 2,080 hours.
Right.
Full time.
Okay.
When you contract out, you do it based on the hours needed at each post.
So we have fewer hours.
Yes.
Well, I understand that, but so what we're saying is that we have people that we're hiring that aren't doing work. Because of vacation time. I mean, let's not say that they're not, say vacation time that we're not paying for. But even that 40 to 80 hours holiday time, does that make up the difference? Like I said, I'm just doing a very rough calculation here. I'm just trying to wonder if 30,000 per equivalent full-time position, if that's an accurate number, if that's a little bit aggressive. And maybe it is. I don't know.
I think, to speak to the time a little bit, I think obviously with the full-time employees, not only is it the vacation, you have training involved, you have other leave that you are impacted to your resources as well, where when you're contracting out by hours, you're getting the hours
that's included in your rate,
right,
they take
you're
care
looking
of that.
At. So, you know, some differences in that regard, just in terms of how that times apply with your full-time employees. In terms of the numbers itself, I mean, you know, Lisa could probably answer more specifically, but when you're really tying hours, you're comparing hours, what we would use for private security, to what our full-time employees would get in terms of salary, the estimation and the dollar amount, you know, is a, you know, a hybrid of those two things, and that's how the 760 estimate came to being. And that's probably the best number we can come up with in terms of fairly reflecting what we feel to say.
So one of the things you're saying is that, well, granted, a full-time employee is 2,080, but by the time you take out vacation, you take out holidays, you take out sick days, which we are paying for,
Correct. That
even if a person is busy every minute that they're in training, if they're busy at a post every available time, then the number is really, you know, significantly less than that because of the normal times that they're not sitting at a post that we pick up when we have a full-time equivalent, whereas if we have a contract, that's figured into the contract, and it's up to the service provider to take into account those
right.
items.
And Mayor, I also think that's a huge part of it. Also, I think through this effort, as we've sat down with the departments, we can more easily match up the hours that are needed with the individual. Today, you know, we may, not that we don't need the security during certain hours, but under a contract, we can choose not to have coverage because we're only going to pay for this amount, and maybe not for the last 3 hours of a person's full-time.
Right now, we have a full-time employee, and that's what we have, whether we need it, whether we don't need it, we pay for the efficiency or inefficiency.
So there is kind of an apples-orange calculation because on the full-time equivalents, you're just calculating them as full-time employees.
Gotcha.
They're here. When you go and look at it as a vendor, we go and look at how many hours do we actually need for each of these facilities, and then it's just purely based, at that point, it's just a calculation based on hours.
Well, I'm not so sure it's apples and oranges as much as it is that one of the,
yeah,
I mean, we're focusing on difference in pay rates.
That's, pay rates
and even if the hours. What you're saying is, even if the pay rates were the same.
Right.
If we go to the model you're talking about.
Right.
We should see a savings because we are much more efficient
more
in how
part.
We allocate resources because we can put people in places that we need them without having the natural downtime that you have just by having a full-time employee.
Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I was part of the council that established municipal security as well as approved enhancements after 9/11. And the leadership at that time did have a very extensive and comprehensive discussion of the pros and cons of outsourcing and having municipal police force that are city employees. And the conclusion that we came is that the public health, safety, and welfare was better protected by having city employees protect the valuable facilities that we have, the assets that we have, the employees that we have, and the public that use our facilities. And that comes really from a desire to have employees who are committed to the mission of the organization rather than employees who are committed to the mission of another private company. And so I have a very strong concern and reservations about going down this road, because I think what we're doing may have the potential to increase risk to the city. We may have short-term savings, but I think we have long-term increased liability potential. And that is, it comes from risk to members of the public who use our facilities, risk to the assets that we have, risk to the assets of people who come use our facilities, and risk to Mesa employees who are here if the work is not done in an effective manner. These private security people will not be City of Mesa employees. If they get hurt on the job, there's risk to the city. For even though they have worker comp to their company, there is risk to the city. If the city is negligent in terms of its facilities, there is risk to Mesa employees who work alongside those people if they're at risk for actions against them. That's what happens anytime we have contractors and employees working side by side on a job. And so there is that element of a risk there. And what I fear here is that the short-term savings can result in potential long-term greater liability to the city. And so from the risk standpoint and the commitment standpoint, I've got some concerns about this. But if the council deems that we move ahead with this, I think it's a program that should be monitored very, very closely. I do disagree with excluding the MAC from a secure site. It is probably the most highly visible facility we have in the community. I was intimately involved in the design of that facility and in the discussions for security for that facility. We've got many doors. We have many hours. We have over 250,000 patrons for a year who do that. I know we got headlines as being the most boring city, but if Joshua Bell is playing at the Mesa Arts Center and someone steals his $1 million violin when we have our private security folks on the job, I guarantee you we'll move beyond that ranking of the most boring city. There are valuable assets that, not only in terms of people, but in property. And so that's a decision that I would hope we would reconsider. Quite frankly, I haven't heard the issue of any problem with flexibility at the MAC until our discussion today. I didn't realize that was an issue. So at least just from my perspective, I would just urge great caution in moving ahead with this proposal. And if we do, I think it needs to be scrutinized very carefully in terms of the companies that are chosen and the employees that they have. Because, again, in my experience, these companies have very high turnover. And the person who's really good today may be gone tomorrow. And so that you don't have that connection either with patrons or the employees who work within our facilities. And that's where, again, I think we create an element of increased risk and exposure to the city. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Higgins?
I wondered if we had looked at a more flexible model of our own municipal security, having X amount of part-time employees that could act, as Mr. Brady said, on a more flexible schedule. Have we looked at that? Have we talked to our employees to see if some of them are willing to do flexible schedules, part-time, come in, come out? Or did we just look at outsourcing?
Councilmember Higgins, we did not look at part-time with our staff. That's something that we could do and come back to you on. It's, again, it would be a staffing issue. I think we'd have to look at expanding a little bit in order to cover those same amount of hours, even with part-time. But with part-time employees, and we also run into the same issue that Mr. Kavanaugh brought up with turnover and that sort of thing as well. But that is something that we could examine.
Vice Mayor?
All right, your $760,000 savings is based on adding just 16 private. Is that what I'm reading in this report?
Do you know how many?
It would be
it's really
hours,
based on
35,
hours.
About 35.
I know it's hour based, but
well,
you're averaging.
It's 26. Essentially, you take the 10 vacancies today, and you
the way to look at it is you're at 42 today.
42 to 60.
We would end, we'd only end up with 16 full times, and then the equivalency of whatever hours that we need to cover the 26 would then be privatized.
Okay, well, I'm just reading slide 10 where it says outsource important site 16 FTEs. And I thought we just got through saying that right now we're running with 32 and we're on the fringe of not having enough. And yet on slide 10, it says retain 16 for FTEs for critical sites and outsource 16.
Right.
So you're at the 32, not the 42.
Well, those 16 are going, those are being eliminated, being outsourced.
Right. I understand that.
Plus the 10 that were vacant.
But that's not what it's saying in the slide. I'm saying that 760 is based on only doing 16.
Okay. Well, it says eliminate 10 vacant positions, and you keep 16, and then you eliminate the other 16 through outsourcing.
It just says outsource important sites, so you're at 32.
No, I know what to...
It's confused. Okay.
We're ending up in the same place as the presentation.
We're ending up in the same place.
It's 42 are the full-time equivalents. You say we would need to be at full staff right now and to satisfy
correct.
All our needs. We currently have 10 vacant positions. So what you're saying is that in your proposal, those 10 vacant positions you're assuming have already been eliminated because they're not filled right now.
We eliminate those, correct.
You're proposing eliminating an additional 16.
Yes.
And that's what if I'm reading right, that's what you're trying to get to there, 16.
That's
correct. Is that you've already eliminated, by the fact that you haven't filled, the 10 positions that get us from 42 to 32 that you're operating with today. You're proposing eliminating the additional 16 positions to get down to a net 16 that will stay. It just so happens that our 16, it's a coincidence, they're the same number.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
No, but what I'm saying is your 760 based on outsourcing 26 full-time equivalents or 16?
It's eliminating the 10 positions and in addition to that, outsourcing
you're right.
the equivalent.
So 26
you're right.
is the number.
You're right. The way you said it is correct.
To get to.
That's correct. Now, Council, here's...
Well, I still didn't get the answer. Is it based on 26
or 16? 26, yes.
Okay.
There's 26 positions that will be eliminated from the current full-time equivalency.
Right. Yeah.
So that you only have a balance of 16 FTEs in what is the current missile security staffing. So that's one option, Council. And I hear the concerns, and we've gone around and had the same concerns, too. That is the first option that we've presented to Council after doing a very hard scrub of looking at our facilities, looking at where we believe we have the opportunity to outsource, to bring in private services. Put the 10 back in. We probably don't need to worry about whether it's 10 or 6. It's 26. And we looked at that as far as those facilities that could, we believe, are best service, or could be served, sorry, with the private contractor. And we've determined those facilities. The only ones that we've listed, the ones that we would maintain with the current 16, and I think we've identified those. What there is another option, and I hear the concern, is maybe that's going too far too quickly. And I think Councilmember Kavanaugh brings some good points that anytime you go into a outsourced contract, whether it's this or anything else, you're it's kind of an unknown a little bit. We currently do have 10 vacancies. So one proposal, if we're not comfortable going all the way and taking the 16, the total of 26, we could start with the 10 that we already currently have vacant. If you would then allow us the direction to move forward with those, remind me again, if with the 10 equivalent positions that are vacant, which facilities would be provided private? I don't think it includes the MAC then, is that correct? So MAC would retain the current city employees, and which ones would be have private contracting?
Mr. Brady, that would be the museum, the library, municipal building, and East Mesa Service Center.
Okay. So on page or slide 9, that would exclude the MAC. And that could be, and that's something that without the current, with the vacancies we have today, we could take the equivalency of that cost of full-time 10 FTEs, and we could instead for a period of time, maybe through the end of next fiscal year, we could go through and bring on that service for these four facilities and then see how that works out. We believe that's still a savings about $200,000. Is that correct for that period of time?
It should be about $250,000.
$250,000. So that's another. I'm just trying to give some options here.
Okay. And I got another question still. Is when they come in, and I know it was mentioned already, there is a considerable turnover rate in some of these companies that they bring in these security people because they're not a very high-paying deal, and they move on to something else. Who is responsible for training, and what is the criteria of saying having the same person coming into the same position so that we don't have to train? And if they have somebody coming in new and a high turnover, who's responsible for briefing them on what they need to do at that facility? Because is that cost considered?
Yes. Councilmember Jones, they have a transitionary plan, first off. So, and we're looking at, and I'm backing up a little bit, and then I'll get to your answer, your question. In that 30 days, the companies would meet with the division heads, do site visits, site security analysis, develop post regulations, if you will, reporting processes for each individual site. The contracts stipulate that the same person will be assigned to the same post all the time. Now, they do have turnover, and we'll have to get to see what that rate of turnover is. But as they have turnover, they do also have a supervisor assigned to the unit that takes care of the training, ensures that they're complying with those post regulations. We will also have a contract monitor with the city. The lieutenant, who's currently responsible for municipal security for at least a year, will remain on site and make sure that we are that the contract is providing the services that we expect it to do. After that time, we would still have one person, a go-to for all the division heads, to answer any of the contract issues. So the training for the individual posts will be taken care of by combination, if you will, of the company, the supervision, and our contract monitor.
Councilmember Richens.
I'm the new guy here. If there's an event at City Hall or like a secure facility or non-secure facility, what's the procedure? What are they actually going to do? Are they going to call Mesa PD, or are they going to handle it themselves, or somebody? What's the procedure there? So, I mean, really, what are we talking about happening?
Sure. Councilmember Richards, if it's a planned event, like the MAC has an event, there's usually different security needs, depending whatever the venue is that they would set up, to create essentially a deterrent to make sure that we don't have any issues. If there are issues at a post or at an event, the protocols, depending on what it is, if it's a fire emergency, a police emergency, it's to contact 911, contact the sworn services or the fire services.
Well, I guess what is the event? What's the level of event? I understand the fire, but on a police side, on a security side, at what level does the security officer's jurisdiction or responsibility end, and he or she calls 911 to get a regular police officer there?
Mayor, they have a hands-off policy. They're not to involve themselves physically with people. So what they would do if somebody becomes aggressive is to call for police services.
So their eyes and ears, a presence?
Eyes and ears. Yes, sir.
You know, in my view, a private security firm could do the same thing rather easily. And I'm having a hard time, I guess. I sit in Tom Rawls' old seat, and I have his old office, so sometimes I channel Tom. And so, which is very frightening for me even. But I love Tom, and I had a great deal of respect for Tom in the fact that we're paying municipal security $25 an hour, and the private sector has determined that they're $15 an hour. So why do we feel comfortable spending taxpayer dollars $10 an hour more for the same jobs that private sector is determined is worth X and we're saying it's worth Y? This isn't our money, it's taxpayers' dollars. And if we can find cost savings that bring the same level of security, if they're just eyes on the street and they're calling the cops anyway, I don't understand why they necessarily have to be city employees or private sector employees. I would tend to say let's get private sector employees that can do this job, and it seems like it's just as effective.
Councilmember Fender.
Thank you, Mayor. I share Councilman Richens' opinions on that. What is the turnover rate for municipal security right now?
Councilmember, I don't have the actual number, and I can tell you with the economy and in all positions, the turnover rates have certainly reduced. But in general, my experience is we're continually, when the economy is going well, we're continually trying to hire staff.
Mm-hmm. And to follow up what Councilman Richens brought up, is it apples and apples? I mean, security services offer, or companies offer, varying levels of service, and it's sort of like you get what you pay for. Are we trading level of security for the same level of security? Is that what we're contracting for? Are we, have we recognized that maybe we're a little high on what we're offering and we're trying to reduce that? Or do you believe that what we're, we'll be contracting for is the, it would be the same level of security we currently have? Does that make sense?
Right. I think, Mayor, best to answer that. You know, our research with the, talking with the other agencies gives us the best feel at this stage, but I think we are certainly cautionary on what exactly that level will be. We certainly are looking for comparable customer service. We're looking for comparable security services. I think the key component that is built in is the management of the contract and the oversight that is still involved with the police department. When you're going to a privatized area here, I think it's important that we're certainly monitoring the service we're getting very closely with a high level of scrutiny to ensure that we are getting the customer service, we are getting the flexibility and all what we consider going in fundamentally as positives to ensure those are in fact being put in place. The expectation is certainly that there is not a drop-off in those areas. But I think it's incumbent on us to be very concerned. This is a new area for us in terms of turning to privatization. And so from a contract standpoint, our monitoring of that is certainly part of what we're going to plan to do, and certainly a big part of ensuring that we can validly assess how this works and that it's going to work to the level that that we're expecting. And if not, then we can certainly make adjustments from there.
I mean, I look at a Wackenhut, for example, and I've seen Whack and Hut security guards everywhere. I've seen them everywhere from a, you could tell this is a minimum wage, have a uniform, stand there, to I've seen Whack and Hut at very high security, both private and government, where I guarantee you that was not a $15 an hour contract with a Whack and Hut. I'm just wondering if the contract and the customer service that we have is the same level of service. And if, because I'll agree with Councilmember Kavanaugh, this is not purely about a savings. I don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. And if we do go to the market, and I'm a market kind of a guy too, but I want to make sure that we're not trading down, because that really isn't a market to market kind of a comparison. If we're trading down, then we're saving money, but we're also giving up security, and I am concerned about that. And I think that in these ancillary, these outside areas, that's something that probably we can get with. I think we can be more efficient. I think having full-blown 40-hour-a-week security does not provide the kind of efficiency that we can get by going to the market, because to me, security services in some instances are very up and down. You have an event, you don't have an event. You have a need, you don't have a need. Someplace like City Hall, where you're open from 7 to 6 now, I guess. You know what your needs are, and you can pretty much plan for that. But I'd like to make sure that we're not just going for a cost savings. And if we do define what is the market rate, that we make sure we are talking apples to apples. Now, as I understand you, and as you can see, there's a little bit of unsettledness. That's not a word, but it is now. Okay. I don't sense that we're ready to forge ahead with a full-blown program right now is what I'm sensing. But we understand and appreciate the fact that you're already in a struggle to catch-up mode with the 10 positions that you say you really need the 42 FTEs. I hate that term. The 42 people to cover the security needs that we presently have. Am I understanding you correctly on that one?
Yes, you are, Mayor.
Okay, so right now we're really struggling to keep up. You know, maybe what Mr. Brady brought up, which is that we can find maybe some of our least, our lowest level security needs, for example, and see if we can ease into that. Maybe we're trying to compromise too much, but I think we're a little bit unsettled as taking this giant leap. And by your own admission, that's a big leap for you, too, in the administration of this. So perhaps what we can do, and if this is okay with everyone, let's look at what we can put in with the 10.
Okay.
And figuring that by the time we implement this, we may have 10, 11, 12 just through normal attrition. I'm not trying to tell anyone they have to leave right now. But I would guess that 10 is probably going to go to 12 to 14 or however it fits in. Yep. Who knows? But I'd also like to feel a little bit more comfortable with the numbers that we're talking about, because I still don't get a warm and fuzzy on that $760,000. And maybe if you could provide to all the council members a calculation as to how that, how you came up with that, would I would personally feel a little bit better. I hear other, see other people, I hear other people nodding. No, you nod loudly. I see other people. Yeah, I see other people nodding. Nodding. It's early in the morning. Come on. Is that workable?
Oh, Mayor, actually, I think if we can certainly provide those numbers, I think the direction we need, and I think we're comfortable with this, is if you would allow us the direction to move forward with the equivalency of the 10 vacancies we have, and moving forward with those facilities, and let's go do that for now. That puts it in the four different facilities that are listed on slide 9. We'll start with those, and then by the in the year, that would take us through, do that for the next, really for the rest of this year, the next fiscal year, and then during the next budget process, that we could be, it'd give us almost a years of experience by the time I think we get everything set up.
You can come back at any time also, if it's right. Really working, if our
come
if
back
our
in about a year, higher, nine, if, 6 months, yeah. 9 months, and give a report to council and see how things are going. And
Councilmember Summers, you had a comment?
I think I'm fine with that, but I would add that, what sounds interesting here is that there seems to be a managerial issue with this, where we have the people and the quality of service that we expect to have, but what we don't have is the managerial flexibility, the schedule flexibility. We have a bureaucracy, 40 X number of full-time people. We're going to use those full-time people. We have to hire back. We have to hire back at a time and a half, and I think it would behoove us, if we're going to move forward, whatever that plan is, that we should allow our municipal security to take a look at the functions, as Councilmember Higginson said, and see if there is some way that they can adapt the services that they provide to have some type of cost recovery. Perhaps there is a way to mix in full-time officers with a part-time cadre of officers as well. In Phoenix, what they have done very successfully is compete in a way with the private sector. Garbage, I think, is one of the most solid waste is one of the most successful ones, where the city bids out. I'm looking at Jack. So the city bids out for the services against the private sector, and the best person or organization wins, and oftentimes that has been the public sector in utilizing a very flexible model, and they get a level of service they expect, the quality of people they expect, and the best level of customer service. So why can't we apply that same philosophy here? And I think it's something, as we move forward, that we should consider as well. Thank you, Mayor.
And I appreciate those comments. And I understand we may be putting you in a tough position managerial, because we're trying to create a clean cutoff, but I think you're good enough that you can figure out a way to do that. And I'd echo what Councilmember Summers says. I think we have an opportunity now to work side by side, and I would talk to the municipal security personnel hearing to, you know, make your best case that we are truly getting the value, because this is a concept of not lowest price. And I think sometimes we get blinded by going after lowest price without realizing that we're really looking at lowest cost, the most efficient, which means we get the best value. And often there's many times when you pay less, but it ends up costing you more, either through a degradation of service that is really not acceptable, or the fact that you create other inefficiencies that raise it to the level of where the ultimate cost is much higher. So I think we have an opportunity to do what Councilmember Summers is saying, is work side by side, and maybe security services will find ways to be more efficient and to provide a better value, so that long term we can find this good mix that'll give us that best value, which is the highest efficiency. So is that okay if we move forward under those conditions for right now?
Just to make sure I understand.
I'm waiting for someone to speak up and say, no, I don't like that. Councilmember
I just want
Higgins.
To clarify what we're doing. We're taking the 10 open positions, and we are going to contract out those 10. Basically, any way you want.
If the hours covered, yeah, basically right. We're doing
essentially
that.
Essentially, it'll be for, is it fair to say, Commander, that what that really equivalency is privatizing the services of the East Mesa Service Center, the 55 North Center, facility.
Correct.
Arizona Museum for Natural History in the main library.
In the library.
Yes, Mr. Brady.
Okay.
And does that, and that also buys you flexibility some other way?
It provides me much more flexibility because now I take those 16 people and we can employ them more at the MAC and fill in our area, so we'll have a lot better service.
And I guess that as you have temporary needs other places, my guess is that you have now the flexibility under the contract to perhaps fill that
pull
in.
Pull those in, yeah.
With exactly. The contract, which then would avoid massive overtime and things like that, if possible. Okay.
So, Mayor, then we're back to where you're having your full-time staff, where we could possibly look at them also doing parking enforcement in city areas. That's that ongoing thing that would make municipal...
Mayor, Council...
Privatized.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's already
that's
privatized.
That's coming up, though.
Right? That is privatized. So, but we will... I know there's members of council want to have that conversation about the whole downtown, and we're scheduling that coming up in the next.
Well, I think as part of this ongoing discussion, as we continue to reevaluate the security services, one of the things we're looking at is how efficiently are we using them within the new environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not sure that there will be, if we're using them to the most efficient manner we can in providing security, those resources won't be available to do other things. If we're doing things right, we should be able to utilize them completely in security services.
Correct.
So, but that's something we'll need to talk about and look at as we go forward. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, the next item on the agenda. Hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on speed humps. It's gentlemen, go ahead.
Mayor and Council, my name is Dan Clevenger. I'm the Transportation Department Director. With me is Derek Bailey, Senior Transportation Engineer. We're here to talk about, Mayor, you said speed humps, and that's what we're using today. We're coming to you to talk about another option to add to our toolbox, if you will, speed cushions. The city council adopted the speed hump policy about 11 years ago, and it states that speed humps are only allowed to be installed on streets not designated as fire routes. So we've been able to address a lot of our residential streets to date over those 11 years, but what we're not addressing is those streets that are designated as fire routes where we're still getting quite a few speeding concerns and complaints. To date, we've found over time here that selective police enforcement and these speed humps have been our best tools, our most effective tools, really, for traffic calming. On the third slide here, we got a photo of our standard speed hump. This one's on 26th Street in North Mesa. That's what our typical speed hump looks like. We have over 600 of those in place today. Our fire routes have been problematic, and we've worked closely with the fire department from the beginning of our speed hump policy over the 11 years. And what's happened is they've established a network of streets where these are streets they regularly use for emergencies, and no speed humps would be allowed. So we're continuing to get those concerns, and it's not possible to get police enforcement continuously. So we've been looking for a new tool to address speeding on fire routes. Enter speed cushions. The reason these are called speed cushions is I'm told they look like pillows or cushions. They're not soft. They're not soft. We've experimented with two types over the past year or so, rubber cushions and asphalt cushions. The profiles are a little bit different, making the rubber cushions a little bit, significantly more abrupt. And so we've got a few complaints on those. However, the theory is the same. They both are designed with gaps in the humps to let emergency vehicles pass through with limited impact on their speed. There is some impact. You'll see on the sixth slide there, that's a asphalt speed cushion that we used in that's in Glendale with our vehicles. We want to take them out there to see how it works. A little bit hard to see, but there's because the hump's all pretty black, but there are two gaps there. On the next slide, if you look, there's a diagram that shows the above rectangle is a traditional speed hump continuous, and then you'll see the gaps where a fire vehicle would pass through. You and I in our passenger vehicles could only get one tire down in there, so it's still effective. You're still getting, if you take it at a little too fast, you'll get some discomfort, and so we keep folks in check pretty much. Okay? So our trials, if you look at that slide, you'll see, you might recognize the one on the right, that's right behind this building on Pepper Place. The other one's another residential street. This is where we tried the rubber speed cushions. We did Pepper in two residential streets, and then we wanted to do one fire route, one collector street. The first three we did were just weren't required to be speed cushions. We did them kind of as a demonstration project. So the results we got back were favorable as far as effectiveness. If you look on on the ninth slide, we had rubber cushions on Hermosa Vista we installed. That was the street we selected, which was a collector route. And we installed those in December 2007 and at a cost of about $6,200 per set. I think we had six sets out there in that 1 mile. They were very effective. They reduced the speeds from 41 miles per hour to 31. You know what? I said those were asphalt. I'm still talking about the rubber cushions. We got a real good reduction from 41 miles per hour to 31. That's the 85th percentile speed. Probably heard me say this before, but that's the speed. There's 15% of the traffic going over that speed, so I had a real problem out on Hermosa Vista. In general, what happened on Hermosa Vista is the residents pretty much like that. They like the impact. They like the slower speeds. The other surrounding neighborhood folks who drove on that street as well did not like the humps.
So yes, the people that lived right facing onto the street liked it because the people who were in the surrounding neighborhoods drove slower.
You got it, Mayor.
But the people that were in the surrounding didn't like it because they couldn't. They had to drive more slowly.
Yes, okay. And let me say this. Typically around the
That's
city with our speed hump program, we give a lot of emphasis and kind of a weighted average, if you will, to the folks who live on the street because they're most impacted on the lower volume streets. But when you get to the collector streets, they're drawing from a bigger area and they are public streets, and it's not just the people living on the street that are entitled to be on that street. So, and that comes into our recommendation you'll see later, our idea of holding a public meeting in the neighborhood to get that feedback. We don't think we need to do that on a typical street that has the lower volumes, but because there's a lot of feedback folks want to give, we're recommending that. You'll see that in our recommendation.
How about if we threatened to put them on the other streets even if we didn't need them, unless those people drove more slowly?
Mayor, I'm going to leave that to you.
Oh. Well, it looks like you're leaving everything to me.
Yeah. I mean, we'll give you a recommendation, Mayor.
Oh, okay.
So what's happened today is we got a lot of complaints on the rubber speed cushions. We've removed all of them except the ones you see on Pepper Place. The second trial, we came up with a gentler profile, if you will. These asphalt speed cushions mirror more the traditional speed hump, so it's a little more gentle ride, still effective. We got a pretty good reduction in speed. They're just less abrupt. Eight miles per hour versus the 10 we got with the rubber. And again, that's in between humps. And then as you get to, there's a comparison in your report. Are we one slide behind? Sorry.
That could either be viewed as 2 miles an hour, which is insignificant, or it could be viewed as almost 10%, which
Correct,
is significant. How do you view that?
I tend to look at it more as the percent.
So
then the feedback.
You think it's a significant difference that they're driving 2 miles an hour faster, I mean?
No, Mayor, I would say when I look at the cost and I look at the effectiveness, I firmly believe that the speed cushions, the asphalt speed cushions, is a better tool for us.
Okay, so you don't view the percentage as being significant because the asphalt results in 2 miles an hour higher speed, right, than the
right.
rubber
they're,
does?
They're both effective.
Yeah, but it's 2 miles it's higher. What you're saying is that for the money that we're spending extra on the rubber, for the complaints we get from surrounding communities about the abruptness, that 2 miles an hour, we're just not getting a bang for our buck by going to the rubber versus the asphalt.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Okay, so we're on
11.
So I've stated that we had a similar reduction in speed. They've been more palatable to residents, and the cost you see there, $3,900 per set, and it's a little over half the cost of the rubber cushions. So on to our recommendation. It's threefold. We'd like to change the speed policy to include speed cushions, and in this case, asphalt is our preference on for fire route streets. We'd like to include a neighborhood meeting for those collector streets that would be getting speed cushions. And then we'd like to take the results of the neighborhood survey and the meeting results to the TAB to give folks a place to appeal and just to confirm staff's priorities, if you will. I'd like to mention just a little bit on the fiscal impact and the timing issue that we have. Currently, we're budgeting about $150,000 a year. That was a kind of a number picked with previous council and staff. And we've had that in place for a couple of years. We haven't been using all that. It was just for speed humps, and I wouldn't use the term saturated necessarily, but we've treated most of the worst locations as far as speeding problems. They're still continuing to trickle in. However, we think that we would go through that $150,000 pretty quickly with this new tool, because we've been denying these for some time, and we do have a little bit of a backlog. I think when folks hear, if council approves, when folks hear that these are available for the next few years, I would expect to probably fill that full complement. The good thing is we have flexibility. We've got a priority system. So typically what we do is collect data throughout the year. And our plan was, with the previous council, was to evaluate and prioritize in March. So we'll get 30 requests, presumably, perhaps, something like that. We'd evaluate all of them, rank them in order by speed, secondarily by traffic volume, and then our money will go as far as it's going to go. So the dollar amount doesn't really matter, but the priority ranking really helps us out. We would plan to continue that. The problem is we would do that typically in March as far as the evaluation, so we collect throughout the year. That's next month as a new tool. What I propose, I think, is maybe we start to evaluate twice a year, and that'll make this tool available more quickly for these folks, better customer service.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Dan, could you quickly review the policy on getting speed humps put in a neighborhood, what is required of the neighborhood?
Absolutely. Residents could call the transportation department or send us an email. What happens is we require that a study be done. So we contract with a traffic counting company who will get traffic speeds for 48 hours. To qualify, these speeds, the speeds on the street need to be 8 miles per hour. The 85th percentile speed needs to be 8 miles per hour over the speed limit. In most cases, it's 25. Very few streets might be eligible at 30 miles per hour, but so the 85th percentile speed needs to be 33 miles per hour. Once they qualify, staff prepares a survey, and we ask the residents to circulate that, asking folks if they're in favor. We need 70% approval on that street and some distance up adjacent side streets. Our policy states 3 properties on adjacent side streets. That would be different, however, for collector streets getting speed cushions. We would widen that area. So the neighborhood's required to pay for at this time it was $105 for the speed counts. We'd evaluate to make sure they qualify. Petition gets circulated, making sure everybody's okay, and specifically where the devices would be installed, we want 100%. We want to make sure we're not putting a speed hump or speed cushion in front of somebody's house who doesn't want it. They may be in favor of speed cushions, but they may not want it right in front of their house. We've heard that before. And then now, we'd rank
so
them.
They're very much in favor of putting something in front of their next-door neighbor's house.
Absolutely.
Okay. Why am I not surprised?
Mayor, in this case, it's not in my front yard.
Not in my front yard. There you go.
So that's our presentation. We'd like confirmations, concurrence with that, if you're
inclined. We have a couple more questions. First, Councilmember Summers, then Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Dan, have you, first of all, the fact that there is a lack of fire chief officers here to counter anything you say, I think, goes to the fact that
they love these.
That they love these things. Also, the fact, the fact that a driver of a fire truck is not screaming at you right now is a good thing too. Because I think this, because I'm a driver of a fire truck, I think it. There are multiple benefits here. It slows the traffic down, allows fire vehicles to access emergencies as it should. The police department doesn't have to worry about patrolling for speed. They can patrol for other, you know, the really bad people rather than just speed. So there are a lot of good things. I commend you on this very long, it's got to be at least 2 years now you've been going through this, and I look forward to moving this forward. I do have one question, though, is have we had any feedback from our ambulance provider, because their vehicles do not fit the length. Do they have any concern, or since the fire department's a first responder, we can get crews there pretty quickly?
Yeah. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I'm sure they have some concerns. We didn't actively solicit their input. We'd be happy to confirm that or make them be aware that this is coming forward, but I don't think it's anything they can't overcome. It's not good. These aren't going to be on all streets. We already have speed humps, frankly, streets that they're going over.
Yeah, and our provider, I believe, also provides for Glendale, so they're probably used to these, if I'm right. I'm pretty sure I'm right that it's the same provider.
And our speed cushions are modeled after Glendale.
Okay.
Mayor,
I look forward to moving this forward.
We did have a representative from the police, from the fire department here, and their position has always been they prefer nothing. This is a good compromise for them, and we've worked with them continuously.
Well, I can understand it sort of raises the pressure, because I can see Councilmember Summers driving and worrying whether he's going to hit the gaps or not.
I don't actually worry about that at all, which worries my company officer.
If I were you, I'd worry about the reaction of those on the truck when you miss one.
There's a reason they took the guys off the tailboard.
Oh. You were going to get them off there anyway.
They were coming off one way or the other.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Throughout the years, my friends in the fire service have given me gentle teasing for being the council member who brought speed humps to the community, and they've reminded me of this when I've been on ride-alongs with them at times. But I think what is being proposed here is both sensitive to the needs of and responsive to the needs of the neighborhoods as well as to the fire department. So I think this is a very logical progression of our policy, and that's why I seconded Mr. Summers' motion earlier. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Comedy.
All right. I think I see universal acceptance, so move forward.
Thank you.
With your recommendations. Thank you. Okay, third item on the agenda is acknowledge receipt of minutes.
So moved.
I have a motion for Councilmember Summers, second from Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Richens.
I attended the Arizona League of Cities and Towns presentation on the Smart Growth Scorecard yesterday. It's a requirement for state funding and grants, presuming there is any left. But we're going to have to fill those out. I just wanted to have a better idea and perspective of the questions they were asking. I've actually, in my day job, have been working on that scorecard and providing input to it. And it's been interesting to have the city hat and other hats to wear as we went through that. But I think it's been a good process and will help us grow better. Is that right? Anyway, in the future.
I have sufficiently butchered the language this morning. You are free to do whatever you'd like.
Can I ask Councilmember Richards, is there a website that the community can go to see what you're talking about when you
say
that?
Yeah, if you go to the Arizona Department of Commerce website, they have a link to Smart Growth on the left side. Click on that and that will take you to the scorecard.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Any other reports? Councilmember Higgins?
You want to mention the fundraiser at the MEC?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Saturday night, three of us, Councilmember Higgins, Councilmember Kavanaugh, attended the Art on the Move at the Mace Arts Center, which is the Mace Arts Foundation's annual fundraiser. And my wife and I had the privilege of serving as the honorary chairs, which probably lowered the quality of the event significantly. But it was a very, very nice event, very, very good. Very interesting that we had it on the stage of the Akita Theater. And it's quite a sight to be on the stage eating and then looking out on the theater itself, which is pretty stunning, very, very impressive. We have a wonderful asset, and I know there are people who may feel differently, but last I looked, the Art Center was there, And as long as it's there, I think it is our responsibility to make it as absolutely successful as we possibly can, because it is a community asset, and we should make any community asset successful. So I thank all those who volunteer, and we have literally thousands of hours of volunteer work given over at the Arts Center and at other, certainly every, most every area of the city. We have a lot of volunteer work, and that's a great thing about this community. But there's a lot of people who give a lot of time, and this was event was no different. So congratulations, and it was a very good event. Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Last night, four of us from the council were able to attend the special exhibit at the Mesa Historical Museum on the new Cactus League exhibit. And I think this is a great addition to the arts and cultural scene and sports scene on our community. I'm very pleased at the way the city is working with the Historical Museum in both cross-promoting spring training sales as well as visits to the museum. I think this is a great start for what I think will be a very great permanent collection for our community.
And I understand it's growing. As people see it, they bring in more memorabilia. Apparently, you know, the Cactus League spring training, there is not a collection anywhere in the country of any memorabilia from any spring training. The Baseball Hall of Fame doesn't have anything, so we're actually starting from scratch and creating something here in Mesa that does not exist. So it's real interesting to see some of the history and the comments and look and see how it's evolved into the where it is today. So thank you for that report. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, if you haven't gotten your tickets for tomorrow's Breakfast with the Mayor, please do so.
Wait, there are still tickets available?
Just a few, Mayor. I'm sure just a very few.
Well, so people need to rush out right now to get their tickets because they may be left standing.
Go
at the door.
Talk to the Chamber of Commerce. Get your tickets before it's too late. It'll be at 7:30 in the morning at the Mesa Hilton.
Before they have to pay those scalper prices at the door.
That's right. Then we on Monday, February 9th, there's an Intergovernmental Affairs Committee meeting at 4 p.m. And reminder for next week on the 11th, which is a Wednesday, we'll have our joint meeting with the Dobson Ranch Homeowners Association at 7:30 a.m. at the Landmark Restaurant. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Clark, do we have any requests to speak from citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
There be no requests. We have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.